A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to The Hotbed. This is Series 3, Episode 8. I'm Aniki Somerville.
I'm Lisa Williams.
And we are the Hotbed Collective, making the world better, one orgasm at a time.
We are. We still are.
We're still doing it. It's bloody amazing, really, isn't it?
I wonder how many orgasms have happened in the making of this series.
Well, I think if I do my calculations right, because I've got an algorithm going at the moment, I've got a special app.
A tracker.
Which is basically tracking worldwide orgasm rates in different locations. And I think we're seeing a sort of 60 to 70% rise in locations where people are listening to the podcast.
A rise in people's pants.
A rise in people's pants, more adventurous behaviour, more unpredictable behaviour, more experimental behaviour, less TV watching.
Better sleep. Better skin.
Longer hair. Less grumpiness.
Less incontinence.
And more role play.
I think that's to be applauded. So actually, we joke about an app, but we do actually want to build one. So for any of you billionaire tech developers out there, if you want to invest in the Hotbed app, will you give Aniki a ring on her landline?
Oh, no, I'm not going to be giving my landline out. Who has a landline anymore?
Will you DM us? Slide into our DMs. We're at the Hotbed Collective on Instagram. I'm kind of joking slash not joking slash give us your money.
Yeah, I do think there's an app idea. The problem is I've got four or five different ones, so I need to get some FaceTime with a big wig.
And that one's been invented, sorry.
I'm going to be hurling. Oh, FaceTime.
Yeah.
I'm going to be doing four or five pitches at the same time.
That's just the kind of girl you are.
I am. Multi-hyphening all the way.
So what are we talking about this week, Aniki?
Well, poetry, Lisa. So if I say the word poetry to you, what do you get in your brain? What comes into your mind?
War poems.
We're going to be talking with the amazing author, Holly McNish, who is a poet and writer. And she's got an iconic book called Nobody Told Me, which is all about the first year of motherhood. And she's a very interesting person. It's funny because I don't read a lot of poetry. I don't know about you, Lisa.
Tons.
You're probably quite highbrow. But I'd come to poetry after leaving it probably sometime in the sixth form. So a very long time ago.
In the 60s.
Back in the 60s, I used to go and watch those old beat poets in my black polo neck and my black beret.
Oh, no, I was imagining more like kind of... like Joni Mitchell, kind of, you know, those sort of 70s warbly singers that kind of sing like this.
Yeah.
Joan Baez.
It's funny, I did see some poetry actually. I had a really good friend who was into performance art. This is more recently. And she took me to a poetry evening and it confirmed that poetry was perhaps, that kind of poetry was not for me. But this kind of poetry is completely different, because it's actually just all about sharing a common life experience. And I think it's lovely, actually.
Yeah, so poetry does... No, actually, I don't know what puts the fear into me more, poetry or performance art. I think performance art. For some reason, I think when I hear those two words, I think I'm going to be called up on stage to, like, have sex with the artist.
Yeah, there's something, I don't know what it is. I mean, honestly, I need to see probably some very good performance art. I have seen some very bad.
Yeah. Do you know, I like limericks. I really like limericks. And I've actually written one about you.
Oh, go on then, hit me with it. No one's ever written me a limerick before.
Well, I don't know if this is the sort of poetry that Holly McNish would approve of, but I did one anyway. Let me just get out my manuscript.
Okay.
There was a young woman called Anarchy who got so horny she became panicky. She went to a shop to buy all the locks and now she can't find her fanny key.
Oh, that's a good one. I wondered how you were going to find a rhyming word with Anarchy.
Holly's agent, if you're listening, you get the exclusive.
Yeah, I think you should pitch that because I think limericks are one of those forgotten arts where you could kind of rebrand them for our modern day.
Okay, well, I'll work on it. Have you written one about me?
I was trying to, but the only thing I could think of was Lisa and Tower of Pisa. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't get any further than that. I think limericks are not my forte.
So I love Holly. Love Holly. I think the first... She's not a poet as you imagine. She's like young and cool and sort of edgy and relevant and interesting and political because her videos are like music videos and she talks to the camera and she's very direct and raw. And I think the first poem of hers that I heard slash watched was Embarrassed, which is all about breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the kind of double standard in society about how she feels embarrassed to feed her baby, even though her baby needs food. And even though there are, you know, tits looking out at her from magazines and newspapers, she felt very strongly about how, you know, shaming it was just to feed her baby. So that's how I found, and like the video is really cool. It uses lots of metaphors for boobs. So there's like two balloons, two like milk pints. It's very Instagram, isn't it? Because it's like lots of millennial pink before that was even a thing. So I love her and she loves the hotbed. So it's this mutual loving.
Appreciation.
Yes. So I was really excited to talk to her.
Dry lips. He said I'd made him hard. Now please could I make him soft. His erection ached like monthly pains. Please could I wank him off. I wanted to. I did. He came. I smiled. We kissed. We kissed again. I'd have liked to ask him for the same, but English language dried my lips. No word for my wetness. No word for my swollen soft. No word for the action of him touching me till verbs take off. Sometimes I reimagine the sex scenes from my youth with specific words that I could use to balance things a bit. He said I'd made him hard, now could I make him soft? I'd reply he'd made me wet, now could he rinse me off? He'd blown up the balloon, now could he help it pop? He said that his erection was as hard as seaside rock. I'd say that my swell, my puff, was pink and fluffed as candy floss, needed lips to melt it. He asked if I could wank him off. I'd ask if he could lick me off, finger me off, shudder me. All I'm really trying to say is girls need some vocabulary too.
That's right. That was Holly McNish. Hi, Holly.
Hiya.
Thank you for reading that poem, Dry
That's
Lips.
Right. Yeah, I don't know about the title, but yeah.
Well, that's, I suppose, what you were writing about, and that is the words aren't enough to capture, like, female sexual experience. Is that why you wrote that poem?
Yeah, it is why I wrote it. I've just been reading loads and loads, basically, about it and chatting to a lot of friends and mainly other sort of younger female poets that I've met, and I just more and more realise there are so many words that basically that guys have and that girls don't have. And I guess I'm sort of annoyed at the English language at the minute for being so shite in this respect, I guess, to do with sex and sex in general, but like female sexuality more than anything.
Yeah, and as a poet, that's your trade, is to be articulate and to use language in creative ways to kind of capture some element of human experience. So it's a problem, isn't it, for women, for poets, but yeah. Also for women.
Yeah, it is.
And for female poets. So how do you kind of work your way through that?
Oh, I don't know. I think the thing that annoys me most is that I find language really fun. Like I love writing poems, and I'm not the sort of poet that sort of thinks about very specific words. Like my vocabulary, I use quite, I don't know if normal language is the word that I'm looking for, but I think it is. Like the whole point of me writing poems is sort of to sort things out in my head. I don't have this massive extensive use of vocabulary like some poets do, but I think that's why it annoys me even more, because I was trying to write about sex and I realized that not even in like a general spoken language were there words for like like erection, like whether it's like biological words or colloquial words, like both of them don't really exist. I guess the sort of first one would be the fact there's no female equivalent to Willy for kids. And there's obviously this movement going on to get girls to just use the sort of proper words like vulva or vagina or God forbid clitoris. But I still think it's a shame. Like, there's no campaign for boys to say penis rather than Willy. But, like, the more I looked into it, just the more, I think the more interesting it became.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like science is really catching up. Like, I think last year, for the first time, the Guardian published, like, that picture of the clitoris to show actually how big it was and under, you know, how a lot of it's under the skin and all this sort of stuff. But, like, language, and the English language especially, is... it's an amazing language for writing. It's got one of the most, like, extensive vocabularies in the world. But we just don't really have words for a lot of things. Like, even erection. I remember someone saying, you know... well, not someone saying, someone who was writing, a biologist, and she was like, you know, girls have an erection. It's not the same things that happen, but it's pretty similar. Like, blood rushing in, like... getting wet, sort of swelling up, clitoris goes hard often. Like, it's so similar in many ways, but the main difference is there's no word. And I guess it's like with Willy, obviously there are words that kids use for vulva, but there's just so many of them, and they're all different. Whereas guys have, like, words that they all recognise, whereas for a girl you have to sort of, like, you know, what you're going to say, foo-foo, and then your friend's like, what's that? Or you can say fandango, and then your friend says, what's that? Or front bum, and then everyone laughs. Like, no boy is going to be worried about saying willy and think somebody's going to go, what is that? Oh my god, you call it a willy? Like, that doesn't happen. And I guess it's the same with erection. Like, I've been asking people about it, and what you say to ask a boy to, like, I don't know, like, masturbate you. You're not going to... you can use official words, but it's not sexy. Like, if a guy says, oh, he's got harden.
Yeah.
Like, and the girl, like, one of my friends said, oh, my God, I've got such a widen. I was like, you've got what?
A widen.
Then she was like, yeah, but it doesn't really describe it because that's not really actually what happens. But, you know, obviously you can use official words, but it's just not, you know, when I'm like... 15 at a house party and my boyfriend says, oh, I've made him hard.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, oh, well, you've made my clitoris stimulated. Could you please, like, rub it in circular motions until I have an orgasm?
Sexy.
It's not your fun vocabulary. And I think guys have it, but I don't think girls have a lot of it, or at least not enough that it's officially recognised by, like, all women and girls.
We need a universal vocabulary that everyone will understand and find sexy.
And different people find different words sexy, but there is still loads more.
I wonder whether, again, whether there are words, but whether we just have a problem with them because of what they're associated with and because of all the guilt and shame around female sensuality and female pleasure. For example, the word I'm going to use here, and I'll be interested to hear your immediate reaction, but there's the word moist.
I knew you were going to say that word because I always say that to my mum because she hates it so much.
Yeah, everyone does.
Everyone, yeah, weird. I was thinking that on the train. I was thinking, like, moistness and wetness, like, there's nothing, I don't think, like, I guess thinking about it from a language point of view, there's not many things that are moist that could be negative. Like,
yeah.
I know there are negative sexual experiences, but they're not normally associated with being moist.
Yeah.
Like a cake, if it's moist,
it's yummy.
It's delicious. And a fanny, if it's moist, normally, you know, it's...
it's an aroused, happy one.
Yeah. That side of pleasure has been... it's been demonised for, you know... well, God knows how long I was going to say, but that's sort of... yeah, like in religion, in culture, in...
yeah.
Yeah, I think that is partly it, that the words that you do have, people are like, oh, I hate the word moist. It's like, you only hate it sort of, I think, is it? Because we've been told to hate that aspect of ourselves, really.
Yeah, I think so.
But I also do think that there is also a massive difference in the vocabulary. But yeah, if you sort of, a guy said, you know, you'd made him hard and you said, you've made me moist, Like the word sounds nice as well. Mm. I think there's loads of words like that, like the sounds of words. I think that's what I think about Willie. Like it's such a kiddie sounding word. Yeah. I like it, you know what I mean? Like maybe because it rhymes with silly, I don't know. But even things like wanking, I was thinking of that one as well because I'm talking to loads of friends about it and teenage girls about it to see if there's anything that like maybe I didn't use when I was younger. And I keep saying younger. It's a massive problem with like older females as well, or like my age, or whatever people think of as old. But I just think unless we start it from a young age, I don't think it'll change.
Yeah, so we asked our listeners, for some good words for wanking in the last series. And one of my favourites was, I've had a Nancy, because we love Nancy Friday, and so does this listener. And she was saying, Nancy Friday is like the queen of female fantasy and masturbation and orgasm. Let's say I have a Nancy, because it's something quite nice. It's very feminine. It's like unambiguously feminine, and it's quite sweet and nice. And like, I don't know, it sounds like fancy.
Yeah, no, it is nice though, isn't it? The Oxford English Dictionary team got in touch with me about 2 weeks ago because of this poem that I'd put online.
Wow.
And said that they do this like call out for youth words. So words that have like come into use. And like, would I do a call out to see if, I guess just things like somebody was saying about cunny instead of cunnilingus, just calling it cunny.
Yeah.
Like it seems maybe quite a good one, or even just the shortened word clit. Like we're still a bit funny about that, I think. But and I was thinking about that, and I'm definitely going to do it. And I thought, I don't know if it's always about them being in use and then going into the dictionary.
Yeah.
Like, because in other ways, words have been invented and then they go into use, which I think would have to happen here.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be these words that start being used by everyone.
Mm.
I think like in Sweden, they invented a kid's equivalent for vulva. And the government backed this group of parents, and then they just spread it and put it into the dictionary, put it into all the educational establishments,
Sweden,
sent it to the doctors and everything.
Oh,
and then
my God.
And now it's totally normalised. Like, it's totally, totally normal. And, I was thinking about that as well.
Sweden, hallelujah.
I know,
so Swedish.
It's amazing, but they were exactly the same as us in English. So they had Willie. I don't know what the words are, but they didn't have one for girls, and now they've invented it.
So Oxford English Dictionary, I would like to submit to you Nancy for female masturbation, and my new word is boreplay. So it's like
what's
foreplay
that?
But it's boreplay. It's a theme that has come up a lot in us doing this podcast. We set it up because it was about it originally started as sex after kids, because we realized, God, it's just not happening because of birth injury, body confidence issues, just this kind of mental load of running a household.
Yeah.
And the podcast has evolved since then, and I'm really pleased to have listeners that don't have children, that aren't even married or don't live with their partners or are single. But what has become apparent to me is that a lot of relationships suffer because they're not, the mental load of running the house is not shared. And actually it's a common theme. We make a joke of it, but actually if you are living with a partner, for example, and they are not pulling their weight around the house, it is very hard to go from feeling annoyed at them and nagging them to suddenly being a sex goddess with them in the bedroom, or a sex god. So boreplay to me is if someone helps me at home with giving me a lie-in, taking out the recycling, just sharing everything.
Yeah.
So I'm not always the one having to remember people's birthdays, buying the presents, paying the bills, for example. It's boreplay.
I always think, obviously, like I've got a daughter and I go to loads of midwifery conferences now and read. I get asked to read a lot at midwifery conferences. And I always thinking about the, like, one of the things whenever I read it out at gigs, this part in Nobody Told Me, one of the bits that I always read out is about the appointment 6 weeks after I gave birth, when the nurse said that I was healing and that the stitch, well, I didn't have many, but the stitches were okay, and then she said it was okay to have sex again. And I'd written in this thing that I thought, fuck you, basically, when she told me. But thinking about it more and more, and that's the bit of the book that the most women have come up to me and spoken about after the gig. And I was thinking, you know, that After birth, the only type of sex that I was told I could have again was like penetration.
Mm.
And I'm sure other, like I saw that on your website, I think it was, I was reading about how you said, yeah, the idea of like other things mm. that are stimulating and massage and other things that are much better mm. after having birth. And I feel so angry about that appointment. And I was speaking to a midwife who was about 60 the other day, and she was like, yeah, I've said that in every appointment. I've said, oh, you know, wait about sex, but I've only meant penetration. And yeah. I was thinking, nobody says, you know, once this is okay, you might be able to be like licked out again
yeah.
or fingered again or any other act, which is not to do with a guy mm. being able to
mm-hmm.
have his penis inside you, basically.
Yeah,
I think it's terrible. And I'm sure you could get licked before penetrated after birth, and it would probably, like, not saying everyone would want to,
yeah,
but just there was nothing else told to me other than penetrative sex.
Yeah, and it's so reductive of how we interact as a couple, yeah. you know, and it's so reductive of female sexuality that, oh, we're going to be waiting for this golden moment where we can have a dick inside us again.
Exactly. The thing that in the first place made pregnant, and not, but for many, many women, that's not the highlight of a sexual experience from personal point of view and from all these loads of studies that I've been reading at the moment.
Totally. So let's talk about the orgasm gap. So we've talked about it a lot on our series. Heterosexual and gay men come most of the time they have sex. Then lesbians, then bisexual women and straight women. And yeah. the difference is about 35%, isn't it? So it's significant. And Holly has written poems about this, and it's something that you feel as strongly about as we do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is something I feel strong. Like, I find it, it's mainly, from what I can gather, something that affects straight women in straight relationships more than anyone. Mm. The thing I was reading about the other day, it was this, it's called the Hype Report, and it was one of the biggest reports of how women masturbate. And then it was comparing that to, obviously, like, heterosexual sex and what you're taught about sex. And like you say, and like what you see on screens, unless a film is about female sexuality, the sex scenes are shit.
Mm.
And I was kind of thinking about that, and thinking it's probably also, as well as the, you know, history of sex only being okay if it's for reproduction, it's also easier to film a couple under the covers than it is to film somebody getting fingered for yeah. 10 minutes. Like, that turns quite quickly into possibly being virgin on pornographic, and the rating of the film going up.
Mm.
So, like, in, you know, normal TV, it's easier to show a couple getting under the bed, but you could obviously show like oral sex and stuff in that way.
Oh my god, I just have to jump in, sorry, and tell a story about when I was at university. My housemate, it's just reminding me, my housemate at the time was a guy, and he worked at the local art center, the MAC in Birmingham, which is a really cool place. And he, I think, worked front of house. But when the film Nine Songs was on with Margot Stille,
I've not seen it.
Nine Songs is a film, it's quite sort of art house, about, I think it's about a couple over a weekend just sort of having some fun.
Yeah.
He was appointed on Wank Patrol. So because there was so much sex and nudity in this film, he basically had to be in the cinema to make sure that there weren't any men wanking. And he came back and he was like, oh my God, it was so graphic. You saw the inside of a vagina.
That's amazing.
And that's just what occurred to me. It's like, you're so right. You don't really see that kind of, like, unless it's porny,
yeah.
you don't see the sensual side. And maybe because it's not until this point been very cinematic, but that's just an excuse, surely.
Yeah, I think it is an excuse, because obviously you could see it. And yeah, the other thing, like what you're talking about, I think what fascinates me is the way women, straight women, well, any woman masturbates compared to the way a lot of straight women are in sexual situations compared to straight men. So like the actual physical things that you do when you masturbate, it, you know, rarely, I'm just going from this study, it was like 1,000 women, and they're all answering this question about specifically how they masturbate, and it was about 1%
mm.
use penetration alone.
Mm. Yeah,
because it just doesn't do it for most women. Whereas in your sex life with a partner, mostly it did include that. And all these things about, oh God, there's so much stuff. And I've had this about, oh, I remember of like masturbating ways to try to do, right, if I practice doing this, then I can insert this into a sex life and then I can also have, it's like, I'm going to so much effort here. Like, this is totally ridiculous. You just need to change the way that a couple is having sex with each other. So it's not so orientated around the way that a guy likes it. Like,
yeah.
But all that, I think, just comes from this young age and just being used to doing stuff.
Yeah.
But that fascinated me, like just reading and understanding the way women masturbate to give themselves an orgasm is physically very different from penetrative sex that you see.
Yeah.
Whereas the way a guy masturbates, not everything about it, obviously you're not going to like stand having, you know, whatever, there are lots of differences, but the actual physical use of hands will be pretty similar to what is going on in the sex life he then has with a woman.
Yeah. And yeah.
In general. So I find that quite fascinating.
Totally. The other one that we love, stat that we love, is how 20% of women come with penetration alone. And I think that's been a revelation to a lot of our listeners who feel like there's something wrong with them, because
which is horrendous.
I know. When you realise actually you're in the majority rather than the minority, because it's brilliant if you can orgasm through penetration. That's amazing.
But why is it brilliant and amazing? Like, well, why do we say that? We say like, oh, it's brilliant. Because I've thought that as well. I've got like two friends that say they can have an orgasm through penetration, but they've also only done that when they've done lots of stuff before.
Mm.
So it's not like they've been not turned on and then all that's happened is that. So I'd love to see more research to do with it. Like, I asked one of my friends, like, quite detailed, like, because I can't. And it really doesn't bother me. Like, stuff's amazing. But, like, I remember feeling like jealous of her because she could.
Yeah.
And I was like, she's not having any better orgasms than I am. I'm only jealous because she can do this thing so she can have the sex that apparently we're taught that we have to.
Yeah.
But actually, why? Because
that's so true. I suppose my thinking is, if, because I can't either, it's not that I think can't sounds kind of negative, doesn't it? It's just that's not how I orgasm.
Yeah.
It's not to say I don't enjoy penetration. That sounds so textbook. It's not as I don't enjoy penetration.
It's the same.
But like, it's more, I feel happy for the people that can, because I assume that they've experienced more pleasure and less awkwardness and less feeling of like shame.
They've just made their partner feel better.
Yeah.
I doubt that someone that has an orgasm from penetration alone, the orgasm's any better than me having an orgasm with a little hand on my clit and being penetrated. Like, it's pretty bloody good.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be better, but I think it would be easier.
Yeah.
Because then you don't have to do stuff other than what's easy for a guy. I just think, because I feel the same, I always think, oh, that would be great.
Yeah. I think that it's all often coming from the same place. So now we know that the clitoris is so large and internal, and quite often pleasure and orgasm can just, it just depends on what angle this clitoris is being hit. So and it's like anatomy, it's like our bodies are so different, like my face is different to yours, you know, and it's sort of like, well, sometimes you might have an orgasm through like anal sex, and sometimes it'll be through like cunny. I'm going to call it cunny.
I think cunny's quite a nice one, actually.
I do too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it.
Oxford English Dictionary.
Yeah, that'll be one that I put in, because I think it's a bit nicer than licking out. It sounds a bit like you're sort of, I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds like someone is taking something away from you.
Yeah.
Really, weirdly. Now, I want to talk to you about just general shame on women, because the first poem of yours that I heard was Embarrassed, which is about breastfeeding, and it's got a brilliant video, which we'll link to in our show notes. And actually, for any of you that, any listeners who haven't seen Holly perform her poetry, she does it quite often to camera. And it's like a music video, really. That's sort of your kind of look, isn't it?
Oh,
to put on YouTube with like really interesting graphics. And so embarrasses about the shame of breastfeeding and how you felt when you had your daughter that you had to sometimes like hide in the loo.
Yeah.
It's quite similar, isn't it, to the shame that women feel about their pleasure. Would you make that connection?
Yeah. I think it all goes together. And I get kind of not annoyed about things to do with breastfeeding, but I just, yeah, exactly what you say. I just think it's all so similar. Like the, it's all just around like female bodies and female sexuality. I was thinking that a lot when, well, now looking back, like I didn't really think at the time, I just sort of felt embarrassed. But I find it weird the way we talk about people being embarrassed to breastfeed as if they're embarrassed to get their boob out, which I don't really think is the embarrassment. Mm. I think it's other people seeing another human being sucking on your nipple,
yeah,
or sucking on your tits, which you would never say, because that, you know, mm, like we're not used to seeing a baby sucking on a nipple. We are used to seeing cleavage, and we, you know, there are other things why sometimes I might have wanted to go into, you know, do it in private because I might take the baby off and then milk sort of shoots out of your nipple and stuff. Like there are reasons I know why sometimes it's not comfortable in being in public. But I think the reason for me was just that weird cross between like, is it all right now to now have a guy licking my nipple, and is it not? And sometimes I find it quite like with that embarrassed video, there's, or in the poem, there's obviously stuff about, oh, built, you know, tits on billboards are all right, but it's not all right to have a baby on your breast in public. And a lot of people have sort of backed me up, and I know they're trying to be nice by saying, yeah, like breasts are for feeding babies. It's like, I know that, but I don't think it has to be one or the other. Like, I don't think it's very helpful to say, you know, this is the biological reason for them, which is I'm sure true, but like my I was thinking this when we were talking about like, well, me thinking, oh, great, that you can have like vaginal penetration and come through that. Because I always feel really lucky that I've got such sensitive nipples. And I just assumed everyone was the same. And I remember talking to my friend, she was like, I hate it when people touch my nipples. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I love it when my boyfriend's like tweaking my nipples. And I think that makes me even more bothered about this like defense of breastfeeding in that way.
Yeah.
Because for most of my life, it's been like, most of my life, it'll be like my boyfriend on my boob.
Yeah.
That I want. And I don't want to be made to feel like that's weird.
No.
As much as I don't want people to think that breastfeeding's weird. So I've got this like dream of a poster with a woman breastfeeding a baby, and then like right next to it a sexual scene of a man or a woman in like a sexual relationship licking on a nipple and being like these are both okay. I think we need to get over the fact that these are both okay rather than pitting them against the other.
Yeah, so true. And actually I think that shows just how narrow a view we have of our own kind of, not necessarily it's a women thing, but just like a woman's body is for this. And you're so right, because in France they're like, a woman's body is for the pleasure of the man quite often, you know. And they have great like rehab after
physio.
You have a baby. Great physio.
But it's mainly for the
so that you can have sex again.
It's so annoying though, because it's so good. I think they must have so many less, like, I don't know, but like prolapses or pelvic floor problems, but the reason behind it is so shite.
So true. And then also, you know, breastfeeding in France is not as, the rates are not brilliant in the UK either. But the argument often is, you know, like the breasts is for the man. You know, it's like, actually they can be both. I'm trying to think, like our mouths.
Everything else is both. Yes. Everything else.
We eat with our mouths.
Totally.
We also give blowjobs or go down on girls or kiss, you know. And it's kind of like, why have we not got a problem with that?
I was told not to use tampons until I'd had sex, I remember, when I was a teenage girl. There's lots of things. Like virginity is another minefield. It's mainly to do with straight sex, isn't it? It's mainly to do with the female. I called in the Christmas play to my daughter. I was like, who's playing the Virgin Joseph? And she was like, he's not the Virgin Joseph. I was like, well, he should be. If we're going to call her Virgin Mary, call him Virgin Joseph. But
that is so true. Oxford English Dictionary. I hope they listen to this podcast. We're just coming up with so many new concepts. Yes. So we like to set homework for our listeners. And I think that this week we should set everyone a bit of a language exercise. And you wouldn't have heard this, Holly, but in the studio before, Anarchy and I did some limericks in tribute to you. Not that you do limericks, but it's the only poem.
I mean, a poem's a poem. It's great.
So if we were to set our listeners an easy poetry exercise? Is there something that you do? Do you ever teach creative writing? Or if someone says, I'd love to be a poet, how do I start? Like, is there some kind of hack or easy task to maybe come up with, I don't know, like a poem in three sentences that includes a new word? What do you think?
I think, to be honest, the way that I normally teach isn't very helpful, because I normally say to people, go and read loads and loads of poetry and writing and then write your own. I sometimes tell people to close their eyes, which I think, and I think everyone can do this, when you've got a vision of something in your head, and imagine you're like a very good painter and you want to draw what's in your head, which most people can't do, I don't think, myself included. And then I think sometimes you realise that writing a description of what you can sort of see in your head is easier than painting it. I sometimes do that. So I guess if it was using a new type of vocabulary for this, for sexuality, maybe imagine the thing that makes turns you on, or the movement, but close your eyes, try and imagine it, and then try to like freeze the frame.
Yeah.
Or like have like the sort of video you could get on Instagram that's only like 20 seconds long, so you don't have much to describe. And then just try to write what you see in your head, basically.
And so we'd like people to do this. So based around what turns them on, whether that be like masturbating or with a partner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So something that makes you feel aroused.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd love people to do that. So if you're listening, please do send us in your poems.
Yeah, and don't be embarrassed or think, oh, that's not poetic enough. I hate that sort of idea. Just whatever you write.
It's expression, isn't it?
Yeah, it is expression. And everyone expresses themselves differently, just like everyone masturbates differently.
Yeah. What a note to end on. But I do have one more question, and that is, who did you fancy as a teenager? Famous people.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
I'll just name him. God, who the hell did I have on my wall? I guess it was more to do with words. The thing that I listened to the most was the Out Here Brothers' Boom Boom Boom, the dirty version on the single.
So they, like, the version I remember was quite rude.
I can't even remember what they looked like, but that was I used to just sort of put it on repeat. Although, actually, the scene in Thelma and Louise where Brad Pitt says, I fucked your wife, looking like a cowboy, and then does this sort of crotch wiggle. Me and my friend watched that, rewound it about 100 times. So maybe it was that.
Oh, love it. We're going to have to find a gif of that crotch wiggle and put it on Instagram.
I watched it last night.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Just the whole film, not just that little bit.
I love it. Thanks so much for talking to us, Holly.
Oh, no worries. Lovely to be here.
What, unfortunately, was not part of the recording of my interview with Holly was the conversation that we had as we left the recording studio. It's not always the way.
Yeah, I know. And you really, we need to get better with you actually having a little recorder on you at all times. But then yes. Nobody would talk to you.
Phone tapping.
Yeah.
Might be good.
Secret agent.
So as we were leaving the studio, and we record it in, we often record our podcasts at a place called Acast, which is a podcast platform, and they're very sweet in there, and they're very nice and supportive and quiet. And as we were leaving, Holly and I and Aniki started talking about pelvic floor exercises, and Holly and I both admitted to having had an orgasm whilst doing pelvic floor exercises, and for her it happened in a lecture.
I know.
And for me it happened on an aeroplane. And it's because they're so boring to do that you just do them whenever you remember, don't you?
Well, you've just said it to me, so I'm doing them now.
Yeah, you're going to have an orgasm.
Well, no, I don't think... See, I don't find them erotic at all. It's very strange. But I struggle because I was advised to do one, 10 quick ones.
Yeah.
And then another version, which is to hold for 10 seconds.
That would give me an orgasm.
And but I can do the quick ones. Mm. But this probably shows you the state of my pelvic floor. The 10-second ones are really tough to actually have the awareness that you are actually holding for them. So I am trying to do them because I mistakenly thought that I should do them after the birth, but apparently doing them before the birth is very good advice, especially if you're Mrs. Tenor Lady, which is me at the moment.
Literally, you're wearing Tenor Lady pants.
Well, I'm not got the pants pads. On. Tenor Lady pads.
Yeah.
I know, I don't like admitting it, but I have had to rely on those because essentially I was just peeing a little bit every day.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us.
There's a song in there somewhere.
Oh, it happens to the best of us.
A little bit of pee here and there, it's nothing to be ashamed of. But you should probably do your pelvic floor exercises.
Oh, you've gone a bit warbly, Joan Byers. Style
well,
folk
because I think
music.
It's quite a moving topic. I think it wasn't covered by the folk scene, but I'm sure Joan Byers wasn't immune to a bit of Tenor Lady here and there.
I'm sure she wasn't. I would love it if Beyonce could sing about the pelvic floor because she's done wonders for lots of other areas of female sexuality and female reproductive health and intersectional feminism.
She has. And you're always really good at all the long words and everything.
Intersectional feminism.
I know.
Intersectional
That's
feminism.
That's very difficult to say. Intersectional. Intersexual feminism.
I'm much better at pelvic floor exercises, to be honest.
But what I'm interested in, so orgasming spontaneously, something I don't think it's ever happened to me.
No, it's not spontaneous. So what happens with the pelvic floor?
Were you watching a raunchy film?
No, I was on a plane. Oh, yeah, no, I wasn't. I was just on a plane, bored, because I was flying by myself, which doesn't ever happen, and doing my pelvic floor exercises. But the pelvic floor is the bottom bit of the core, and the top bit of the core is your diaphragm, which goes, the bit that goes under your ribs.
Mm.
And then you've got your...
Intersectional feminism.
Your intersectional feminism...
core.
Frontal muscles, and then your back muscles, and then your pelvic floor is the bottom bit. So when you're squeezing any side of that square, you could also be squeezing the pelvic floor, which is directly by your clitoris.
Oh, interesting.
And because the pelvic floor is this sheet of muscle which controls, it basically goes across your, underneath your bowels, your bladder, and your uterus. And so naturally... It's why you have to kind of squeeze it to keep your bottom tight, squeeze it to keep your vagina tight, and and also the front part, which is your urethra. It kind of spans all of that. So it's going to touch your clitoris at some point, depending on how you're built. So obviously Holly and I are built in a quite a similar way, because we also talked about how we can't have vaginal orgasms. Mm. Anyway, imagine this chat, listeners, happening in a very quiet office of very cool but helpful and quiet people.
I know, but that's a bit the strange thing that happens, isn't it? Because once you get into that kind of chat, you almost forget, you know, because I think we quite often when we're meeting up, we might be in a cafe, quite a public area. And I think when we've been writing bits of the book or talking about the book, we've been sat maybe in a cafe and other people have been listening. But you become very sort of blasé about it. Or sitting on a bus. We've done a few sitting on a bus talking about things.
Yeah, Nana's on the bus talking about vaginal penetration. You know, it's the hotbed way.
It is the hotbed way. It's all about, if we can't be open about it, then how can we expect anyone else to be open about it?
Exactly. So your homework, as well as writing a lovely poem inspired by Holly McNish, which if they're good, please send to us. And maybe we can turn it into a book. And maybe Holly can then publish it as like a sister book to her next poetry collection.
Mm.
Just throwing it out there, Holly. Seeing as we are sexual twins.
You've got the bonding now. You've irritated me.
Oh, and I forgot that the name of this orgasm is called a corgasm. And so sometimes people, and not me, but some people have had orgasms from doing a spinning class or doing ab crunches or doing maybe a plank.
Ah.
A plank for me has never been sexual. It's actually just never been. No. Full stop.
But you know what's interesting? Planes are often, we talked about this before, I think, but planes are often places where people find real sort of sexy vibes. And I thought, because you're heightened emotionally because you're quite close to dying, potentially, in a terrible accident. But also people cry more. So when they watch films, they'll cry more than they would. So things like Marley and Me, if you've ever seen that, about the Labrador, you might not cry if you were watching that in your front room, but on a plane, and you're very aware of your own immortality.
Mm.
Mortality, not immortality.
Intersectional mortality.
Intersexual feminist mortality. Then you're more likely to cry. But also, there's a very famous story about Michael Hutchence and Kylie Minogue getting it on in a plane, under a plane blanket, which I remember reading and thinking, yes. I mean, I wouldn't have needed any excuses to get busy with Michael Hutchence anyway, but on a plane, I can imagine it was even more spectacular.
Are you going to have an orgasm thinking about it?
No, unfortunately, I can't at the moment because my baby might fall out of my vagina.
Will not. Yet again, another note to the listeners, it is fine to have sex and have orgasms while you are pregnant. Mm. As long as there are no complications in the pregnancy, please refer to your medical practitioner.
Yeah, this is a personal fear, neurosis, for sure. And actually, I think most people would argue that it's very good for you in terms of stress relief.
Hey, listeners, when you're listening to this, Anarchy might have had her baby.
Check
her out at Anarchy Somerville on Instagram, and then you'll know. And also check out at Holly Poetry for Holly McNish, and at The Hotbed Collective for us. And at Lisa_of_the_suburbs.
Is it that many underscores?
I think so. Do you know what? Actually,
why have you done
that?
Because that is quite irritating. I'm only saying because when you're trying to type someone's name in and doing the underscore, was there any thinking behind why you would? Because you've changed your Instagram name, which is another big piece of news. But I'm just like, why are you doing the underscore? Is that because there's somebody already in the suburbs?
I think there's another Lisa of the suburbs. I just thought it read more easily. I don't know why I changed my name. I just have identity crisis.
Well, no, I love the name.
Every so often. Anyway, that's me. That's how you can find us. That's how you can find Holly. Tell us about orgasms. Give us any good words that you are actually using for sexy things so that she can tell the Oxford English Dictionary. And
try and have a spontaneous pelvic,
yeah,
intersexual feminist orgasm.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.